Welcome to Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. And I'm not really organized myself, so we're doing the best we can. And you're listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our show on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too.
Okay, so hello and welcome to another edition of Community Living Show on the NCAA Radio Network. So it's Kelly Rayburn here along with Michael Rubin. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty okay.
So I was just reading the 24 hours today's newspaper as of Thursday, July 30th. On page 4, it says, TransLink tells disabled senior Segways they're unacceptable on transit. And Eric Jesbin, who is 61 years old, is modified by Segway, or as he calls it, a Seg Saddles, which means these are, unlike a regular Segway where you stand up, these are Seg Saddles where people sit down and rest their butt through it. I'll tell you the whole story here. A man who suffers from neurological disorder wants modified Segways, also known as Seg Saddles, to be accepted as wheelchairs on transit. Instead of wheelchair, Eric Jeppesen, I hope I get your last name right, prefers to use a modified sit-down version of Segway. It rises his height of eye level and makes him sit up straight. He believes it's generally better than the regular standard wheelchair that most people would normally use. So 61-year-old from Burnaby suffers from a new we had a difficult time trying to figure this out. It's a new neurological disorder called spinal cerebellar ataxia.
Yeah.
Am I spelling that right? I'm hard on pronunciations here.
I think it's ataxia or something like that.
Ataxia.
Spinal bellar ataxia or something like that.
And it was told by his doctor in 2012 to get a wheelchair after he began falling weakly. But he felt the wheelchairs were degrading, and after a bit of research, he found the information that suggests a recovering veterans in the U.S. had successfully using a modified Segways, or also known as Seg Saddles. He got a prescription for one for about $7,000, and later, Mr. Jeppesen was practicing with two-wheeled vehicles that use gyroscopics and lets him to travel up to 20 kilometers per hour. Since he never used a mobility assist before, Mr. Jeppesen took TransLink's mobility training sessions to help people like him to get on transit. But when transit senior officials found out, the final response was no. Quoted from TransLink response submitted to the BC Human Rights, saying, "I understood that, quote, I'm quoting this, I understood that your modified Segway serves your preferred mobility device. However, unlike motorized wheelchairs, which are treated as pedestrians and are allowed to be operated anywhere pedestrians are permitted to walk, it has not been determined as an accepted mobility aid under the MVA, Motor Vehicle Act," they read on that behalf. And Mr. Jefferson feels that modified Segways fits the description of a mobility assist device, which are exempt from the act. Mr. Jefferson says, unquote, "When you get in a wheelchair, people don't look at you. When you go on a wheelchair, right. People don't look at you. They look over you and they look around you. It's very anti-sociable," he said on Wednesday. Also quoted, "When I'm on a Segway with my seat, I'm sitting at eye level. People see it. And they say it's a neat device. They look at me in the eye and says that, you know, they start a conversation that kind of way," unquote. "The device is also better for his posture, and it's controlled by forward and backward leaning, you know, similar to what a Segway would look like. Mr. Jefferson's only forms of transportation now are his Seg saddle, which only has a battery life of 2.5 hours, or pricey taxis. Sorry, excuse me for a minute. All right, so Francis Kelly, his lawyer, said they are in the process of filing similar complaints against ICBC, Insurance Corporation of British Columbia, and the Ministry of Transportation to push the legislative change after Jefferson's initial complaint were dismissed this week.
Wow.
I'm appalled.
Yeah, if anything, the electric wheelchairs that are out there are less stable than the Segway.
Yes, and it's like a two-wheeled person instead of using four-wheeled, because you're using less space.
Using less space, yeah.
And you're, you know, and it's suitable for a guy who has a little seat that sits on him wherever he goes. It's a mobile, and it's not like everybody's probably going to be complaining that, I'm just saying what ICBC is saying is about the, you know, the bikes that they have, the electric bikes.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be saying like, oh, no, it's going to be one of those regular motorbikes, bicycles, and it has to be licensed and everything like that. And
I've actually seen somebody with an electric bike get on transit.
Electric bikes.
Yeah, electric bike. He got on the.
But these wheels are big. But these wheels are big. How can he manage to get an electric?
I don't know how the heck he got it up on the platform, but he did, and he wheeled it onto.
But it looks like a motorbike.
It's a smaller motorbike, right?
Yeah. But when I see them on the streets, they have some sort of a license saying it's an electric bike. And what I'm not going to force an argument on it, but some ICBC people are saying they should have some sort of a license plate saying it is an electric bike.
Right. You know, I've seen some electric bikes that they were definitely the size of like a motor scooter or something like that, and you know, definitely fit big enough to fit the motor vehicle description, because they can get up over what is it 50 kilometer,
right?
You know, but you know, the other thing it did with Mr. Jefferson here is it's only got a 2 hour battery life.
According to this newspaper, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, 2.5 hours.
Mm.
You know.
He probably wants. Yeah, but once he's on the bus, he shuts the motor off, like all other wheelchairs would.
Right. You shut the motor off, then it's like, I'm saying, if he was to go shopping or something like that, right?
Right.
Think about your average shopping trip.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, he's got to get there.
Yes.
Then he's got to shop.
It's the mobility that he has to run through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he's got to get back home again. He could run out of battery.
Well.
Then what's he supposed to do to recharge the thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can see why he would want to be able to use transit to get from point A to point B, take the Segway to the bus stop, jump on the bus, shut the motor
for
off.
For 2.5 hours.
Shut the motor off, go do his shopping.
Yes.
I'm just saying a simple shopping trip.
Yeah.
And then take the bus back home again.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why he will want to use that, because it's going to save him some battery life.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to save him from getting stuck.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about the wheelchair ramp, the ramp of the buses.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just looking here at the picture again.
It's the only thing that I could see being a problem is because of the wider wheelbase.
Yes.
Is it going to fit on the...
on the bus.
On the lift.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the ramp, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I could see would be a problem.
All I can see is talk to Mr. Jefferson about that.
Yeah.
And if you're about, by the looks of this picture, it looks like he's roaming around near Burnaby, where Metrotown is. If you see him at Burnaby, ask him if it really, you know, fits through the wheelchair ramps and stuff. And
yeah,
maybe talk to, maybe, I don't know if we get a chance to talk to one of the executives of TransLink.
Yeah.
About this. I mean, if anybody who represents TransLink, you can give us a call, 604-822-CITR, 604-822-2487. We're welcome to have a little discussion on it.
More than happy to.
But I don't know if anybody from representative TransLink do listen to our show. So.
Yeah. If they're listening, chime in and you know.
Yeah.
Just so we can understand them.
Absolutely.
Why it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just need more information besides the 24 hours. We need more detail on
that. Yeah. Definitely need more detail on that.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Definitely worth researching further.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You had some other stuff about autism?
No, I thought you had more stuff.
I
did see something else in your 24 hour, and I think that as a society,
by all means, go ahead.
The abuse of our seniors.
Oh yes,
it's just a horrendous thing. It's like these people helped us get our society to where it is today, and to wind up in their their elder years being abused.
These are in hospitals, am I right?
Hospitals and care facilities.
Mm.
You know, so
it just feels like the correctional facility out near Woodlands, in New Westminster, all over again for some people.
Yeah, I guess some people took the job to get some sort of a paycheck, and they really don't give a crap about people. And,
yeah.
You know.
That's a damn shame.
I've, It's not the it is certain individuals. It isn't like the whole setup of the system.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the what's lacking in the system is, which according to the 24 hours, and I would probably agree with it, is mm-hmm. accountability and trackability.
Mm-hmm.
Is you're not able to track complaints
mm-hmm.
of abuse to our seniors. You know.
Yeah. So. That's another topic we can talk about if we had anybody representative of, I don't know, anybody care facilities or something like that for seniors. Because I'm 37 right now. Mm-hmm. I'm in a disability situation, but we want to talk about more about senior facilities.
Yeah.
I know. Our former co-hosts, Dave and Lori, are seniors. Richard McDonald's is a senior.
Yes.
And people who did do this show,
mm-hmm.
Cared about a lot of stuff on seniors.
Yeah.
And cared about a lot of other things, including the Woodlands area and all sorts of stuff. This is also important for, you know, more on seniors, I totally agree.
And it isn't just something that happens just in BC. It happens across the country
and around the world.
Around the world.
Mm-hmm. Not just from a Canada point perspective. I mean, I was in Africa, and there is a senior facility, and. In Africa, around near Zambia, around there, near there. And not many seniors have the ability of, you know, most of them don't have a suite or a home facility.
Mm-hmm.
All they have for some low income seniors, all they have is maybe a cart. Or some sort of a cart for their stuff, and they have a little hut, just a little.
Yeah.
I would have to say a prison cell hut type of thing.
About the size of a prison cell?
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing most seniors would live on while I was over in South Africa doing the Habitat of Humanity. That's right, the Habitat of Humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a little bit of a tour of near Livingston around there. So we were doing our bike tour, and we got a chance to see the seniors. And the seniors are a lot different. The seniors care home is a lot different than the one we have here in modern North American.
Yeah. Well, most of the ones in North America, you're not going to be able to afford to live in one if you're just on a senior pension.
Mm-hmm.
And or in the U.S. on Social Security, you mm-hmm. can't. It's not affordable.
Yeah. So where in Africa, you see these little huts where a little small, like I said, mm-hmm. kind of a prison cell site would have one senior living there through the rest of his life. So that's the kind of thing of what people that are living in Africa are at right now. I can go on about Africa.
I'm pretty lucky. We're able to keep my mom is almost 80, mm-hmm. and we managed to keep her in an apartment.
Right.
You know, but. You know, she doesn't need anything as far as assisted living is concerned either. She can pretty much so do everything herself.
Right. So, why don't we take a break and we'll come right back and... We're going to be back, but I do a little tease for my... here's a little joke that I do for my mom, and she's... you've heard of the classical artists, the saying that we will be back, meaning Bach, right?
Oh, yes.
As known as Arnold Schwarzenegger's I'll Be Bach. And so we're going to be Mozart. And we'll be Mozart to you after through these messages. This is a community living show.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here. God. Oh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Well, I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed up.
Oh. Isn't there anything, 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 anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or check us out online at CITR.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
And we're back. This is a community... Well, and we're Mozart. This is a community living show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. Our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. You got something on, we got something on our Gmail account, CITR, not CITR, it's communitylivingradio@gmail.com, where we have a guy named Paul Wakefield.
Yeah, he is an inspirational coach, and I'm trying to find a time to actually get him in for an interview.
Okay.
It actually had to be like over Skype or something like that because, as it turns out, he is in
England?
He's in the in the UK.
Right.
On his website, it's pretty, looks, he looks like he has some pretty inspirational stuff to say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
by the looks of stuff.
Let me see a little bit about his story. From an early age, Paul knew he wanted his own business. While at school between the ages of 13 and 16, Paul had two jobs. Paul worked weekends selling programs. Now, in England, they have a different child labor age, don't they?
It's different down there, I can say.
Yeah, I think they see that differently. So so he's able to start work at the age of 13, whereas here legally you can't start until 16, right?
Mm. That's what I hear.
Yeah. And selling, he worked selling programs at his local football club. That would be soccer here.
Of course.
Wycombe Wanderers. he also had a paper route on Fridays, delivering about 750 papers in a day. Wow, that's helped my girlfriend do papers every night, and she
every
has
night,
about,
every morning.
Yeah,
the with, Province and Sun.
Yeah, and it's about 750 papers with that, and so I know
you get a lot of income on that.
It does pretty okay. So I can imagine it. You know, by comparison, I hope he had a car.
Yes.
So, but again,
My support worker Steve and I were doing that in the morning. We probably get a lot of money out of doing the papers. Yeah. Anyways, go on.
But anyway, while his friends were out playing on Saturday and sat indoors in front of a TV, Paul was working hard, saving his money to buy his first car. 1994, he was old enough to start driving. Thanks to these two jobs, at 17, he had saved £2,000 and purchased his first car, which was a little blue 1.2 Vauxhall Nova. I don't know what that looks like.
Okay.
but I would imagine it's something pretty modest, right?
Yeah.
When Paul left school, he wanted to be a fashion designer. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, his career advisor told him to get into engineering. So he had his try at being a tool maker. School systems do this a lot, though.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you have a dream to be one thing, and they have to shoot it down.
Right.
And I don't understand that. So he tried his hand at being a tool maker. After 3 years of hard work at college and working through his 5-year apprenticeship, he was told that he was dyslexic, mm-hmm. and to consider a new career. Yeah, I've heard that one too about dyslexia. You won't be any good at anything. Go do something more menial. Paul had just wasted 3 years of his life doing something he didn't want to do in the first place, and had no qualifications to fall back on either. Paul soon found himself at the age of 19 working in River Island Clothes Shop, where he started off part-time at 16 hours a week, in fact helping out in the stock rooms where he had deliveries. 2.5 years later, he ended up leaving River Island, where he had been promoted over the years and had become the Ash store manager, looking after a team of 12. Well, there you go. So much for dyslexia, right? Mm-hmm. Paul soon found himself as a trainee, a car salesman, working for a garage in Delta called Delta Motor Company, mm-hmm. a franchise of Renault. Now, Renault, I know that, those cars. With a basic salary of, I don't know what the conversion for pounds to dollars is. So 5,000 pounds.
Maybe I'll do a conversion year. Calculator here while you keep talking.
Yeah. 5,000 pounds a year. Car company, plus a company car, I'm sorry. 18 months down the road, he started off a very crazy working career, and what Paul believes to be the life-changing incident, too.
Okay, so $1 equals 0.49 British pound, all right? So
that's about $10,000 a year.
Yeah, so I'm comparing the British pound, £1. Just give me a moment here.
Yeah, I'll keep reading while you.
Yeah,
while you
go
look
ahead.
That up. Paul first went self-employed at the age of 22. He admitted now that he was it was too young for him. Despite this coming to an end in just under a year, he still believes that it was his first lesson in business, simply because he failed so badly. Listen to that. He figures it did him failing was something good.
Right.
You know, that is inspirational, right?
Yes.
Yet he learned so much.
Right.
This was then the first of a very crazy career for Paul. Paul has been at the forefront of sales, marketing, and development personal development since he was 20. He is now recognized as a successful UK entrepreneur. In 2012, Paul Wakefield was awarded the Startup Britain Business Champion for Northumberland. How about that?
Interesting.
He is recognized as the Sage UK Business Expert, who in 2012 listed him as the top 100 marketers to follow on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it may have been partly how he actually found us was through Twitter.
Okay, so I found it. So one British pound
mm-hmm.
would be $2.03 Canadian.
It's essentially a toonie.
Yes.
A pound is a toonie. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So he was working for a car company for $10,000 a year, plus he got a company car.
Yeah.
Actually, a company car takes up a lot of expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't have to make the payments of the insurance, all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
We pay like, I think it's something like $300 a month in insurance for two vehicles,
mm-hmm.
me and my girlfriend, right?
Right.
So imagine if we had company cards, that would be $300 we could keep in our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, on Twitter, he was a top 100 marketers to follow on Twitter, and he has written a book called The Laptop Millionaire Due to the Sex He Had in Internet Marketing.
I'm bringing sexy back.
He is known as one of UK's leading providers of business training and personal development. We really want to focus on the personal development because there's so many people with disabilities that they're constantly being put down. Right?
Yes.
So personal development is empowerment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And entrepreneurs are full of empowerment. That's the reason why we bring so many on the show.
Right.
Paul has coached over 100 people to help them grow their business. He is known as the expert coach who works with fellow coaches, consultants, trainers, speakers, and service providers. Paul has become an expert in turning people's knowledge into expert advice that sells for high prices online.
Interesting.
Wow. Some of the people that he's is Renault, Jaguar, Audi, DFS,
mm-hmm.
Biffa, I don't know who that is, and Northumberland County Council. Just to name a few of the companies he's actually consulted with.
Right.
So he's looking like he's pretty sought after, too. So.
Okay.
But he contacted us, and he was asking if we could do an interview with him.
Okay.
So I'm going to do my best to get a hold of him. There's time differences and stuff like that. So, trying to get a hold of him from here to the UK. What is it, like 8 hours difference?
Okay,
something like that. We don't have long distance calling to England.
No. So but you said you're going to use Skype?
I can probably use Skype. So when I've contacted him back. I'm waiting to hear back from him about him adding me to Skype so we can talk.
Okay.
So, and that'll probably be how we do the interview is via Skype. You know?
Via Skype.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Yeah. Should be pretty exciting. I look forward to actually talking to this guy.
so. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe in the email response I'll put a copy of what we just talking about him on air already. So yeah,
okay.
There's a couple other people that I found via Twitter and things like that. Is like social media is really helps our show a lot.
Yep. So absolutely.
Feel free to tweet us, you know.
At CITR. No, that's my other show.
No.
At Community Living Radio. At Sea Living Radio.
Sea Living Radio.
That's right.
Yes.
So there we go.
Yeah. So feel free to tweet us. You know, you hear about an inspirational story or something like that. Please send it over to us. You know, somebody did. It rose to the top against different types of adversity and things like that.
Mm.
Yeah. We'd love to talk to them and let their story inspire the listening audience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We all need to hear stories about inspiration and not just the bad news, right?
No. We always need good news.
Yeah. So, and we do try to provide more of the good news than we do bad news, right?
Of course.
So,
you are listening to Community Living on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm going to do a little 2-minute segment on autism. This one is about Autism Speaks, Twins with Autism Run to Make a Difference, and then we'll come right back with more other stuff in a moment.
Alex and Jamie have always been extremely athletic, and they love doing things and keeping busy. They were diagnosed at 21 and a half months, and from that point on, of course, you know, everything changed, and you know, our focus in life was seeing what we could do for them. And running has been such a wonderful outlet, and for our family, and for, you know, for Alex and Jamie.
I met them about 8 years ago. I was a coach for Rolling Thunder, a special needs running club, and these guys showed up, and a few practices later, I was kind of running one-on-one with Allie. And sometimes with Jamie, but more with Allie. He was a little bit quicker.
He gets very, very excited before a race. He wants to go get his number, and he, like, you know, checks out his number, and he says what his number is. And when we ask him, you know, how are you going to run fast? You know, he knows that word, right? Fast. He's just the happiest kid. And when I take a picture of him after a race or before a race, it's just he can't smile wide enough.
After a workout, it takes him maybe 5 minutes or so, but once he stops sweating and he's kind of like composed himself, he'll get in his mom and dad's car, and you can see him in the back seat smiling. He sort of has that self-satisfied look.
When Alex is not running, he's a completely different kid. He has, you know, major high anxiety. He's very focused in everything that he does. But when he's not running, we're dealing with a, you know, everyday life of a kid with severe autism. It's been incredible. We never thought we would all be running together. We did this for them. We hope that this can continue throughout their lives as long as they, you know, enjoy it, continue to enjoy it, and are able to run. That's where our focus is.
All right, we are going to be back in just a moment here on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're coming right back.
Understand more about fashion. We asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know. Let's say someone buys a clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 a.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by me, DJ Ray, and Jason Lawrence. If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca.
You are tuned to the Community Living Show here on the NCIA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly, and this is Michael.
Hey.
And we were discussing about the... Maybe you can explain Ricky Shetty. Who is Ricky Shetty?
Ricky Shetty, he is the daddy blogger. He
not put GoDaddy.
No, not GoDaddy. He put together... Yeah, as a daddy blogger, he's put together a series of events to help not only dads find support, things like that was what his original mission was, mm-hmm. but he's also made it easier for entrepreneurs to find help to grow their businesses and things like that.
Hmm.
I have done a bunch of video work for him.
In the
past, yeah.
Yeah, so Ricky Shetty now has done a conference. This is a conference of a storytelling by Joel Conway. Joel Conway shares about storytelling at about the Internet Marketing Mastery Conference. If you'd like more information on the work, what Ricky Shetty does, go to www.daddyblogger.com, and you can also go to the website www.yvrconference.com. So here's the conversation of storytelling and by Joel Conway.
Fortress Foundation has a very interesting mandate for what we do. We actually prevent the sexual exploitation of children and youth. Heavy, right? We do that through dramatic storytelling. So that's why I called the talk today social justice in social media, because we're social justice advocates, and you guys are as well too. Your stories are really important. Everybody's got a story. Your story is your brand, what you're sharing online. Every time you share, every time you like, every time you talk, you're sharing a story. And story is what shifts culture and builds a framework for people to know who you are based on your stories. You know, back in the day when they had storytellers, these were the sages of the time, where they would come around and everybody in the village would surround this one man who had the unique ability to portray good story. And due to the emotional response that he would get from his audiences, he would structure the constructs of the whole culture, what they would believe through these stories. Now, the storyteller's changed, it's the media. And social media is very powerful, so we're now the storytellers. We have the power within our hands. So just be really wise about your storytelling, because it's being told regardless of if you know it or not. So I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the framework of storytelling, but before I get into that, I want to do a little exercise with you that's kind of fun. And we're going to get you guys to be the storytellers, because I've just empowered you, now we're going to activate you as storytellers. So if there's an even number in the room, everybody will be paired up. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds starting now to find a partner. And one at a time, you're going to share a minute-long story. One side, then the other side. You only got about 15 seconds left. So if you don't have a partner yet, put your hand up. Everybody's linked up. One. Your story needs to be heard. So if it's an odd number in the room, you come tell your story to me. There's a partnership. Everybody partnered up. You got 4 seconds to start telling your stories. And go. 1 minute. Framework of how you can adapt your storytelling into your business or into your marriage or into your relationships or into every aspect of your life. Because there's a really general framework that if you get these pieces to storytelling, you're going to be able to convey a message, whether it be to your audience, no matter what shape they're in or form they take on, and they're going to be able to receive, you're going to be able to land the content that you're talking to them about right in their hearts, and that draw that emotion and draw out the answers that you're looking to get and the actions that you're looking to get. So storytelling and crafting these stories, really, really important. And it all starts with the seed. Okay, so be really open-minded on this one, because sometimes this one's hard to land, even if I do get emotional with you and get a really good rapport happening. Sometimes it's really hard to understand the concept of the seed, but the destiny of your storytelling is already in the seed of what you're about to plant. Pre it going into the ground, or your story coming out of your mouth to your audience, the destiny is in that seed. That means that the fruit that your story is going to produce, whatever you're going to tell to somebody and however you want it to land, is already in there before the story was even thought of. It's all in the seed. The destiny is in there. So you got to be really wise about what you're going to talk about, because it all will manifest out of just the thought process before. So I'm just saying this so that you think long term before you do anything. Always think about what you're going to deliver.
Excuse me, can you explain that again?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you are thinking of a story, say it's a narrative story about, give me an example for your business. What do you do for business?
Well, we sell ebooks online.
You sell ebooks
one
online.
One part of the business is we teach entrepreneurs how to start their own businesses in Spanish, in Latin America, in Spanish.
Okay.
So since I also sell my own ebooks online, I teach them how to do the same thing.
Okay, so you teach, not only do you sell the ebooks, you teach others how to sell ebooks.
Correct.
Okay, so what is the desired result from your client? Say I'm your ideal client and you want me to either buy an ebook or become an ebook reseller. And you've never met me before. What do you want me to do when you first meet me today?
Well, the name of my course is Make Money While You're Sleeping.
Okay.
Because that's what it really wants, even though the program is very, very advanced in a way. I mean, it teaches you how to find a market, how to create your own ebook, how to automate your business, etc. But the name is Make Money While You're Sleeping because that's what they really want. They want to work as less as possible and make as much money as possible.
So there's a desire there that you're looking to stir up in your customer, right? To make that money.
Maybe that's a judgment that you've made in your mind, or you know, maybe it's got some backing. But if it's not authentic, if there's no authenticity in the relationship with your customer, with your wife, with your friend, then the relationship doesn't go any farther past that. So in your storytelling, you want to create authenticity. In our examples, we were talking about anger, we were talking about girls, we were talking about excitement, we were talking about drug stories and things like that. He's excited about the drug stories. And when there's authenticity and emotional engagement within the conversations that we're having with our audience, we're going to be drawn to be able to craft a story that will present the fruit of the results that we're looking for, whether it be business or relationships or anything else. So authenticity in your story, these are still under the ground, and then I'm going to build the framework of our tree so we can show the results of what we're actually looking for in our storytelling. And then I'll tell you a little bit about my story, because I'm still just up here talking to you guys about crafting stories and you don't really know mine. But we'll do the basic framework and breakdown, and then I'll show you some stories so I'm not just some guy up here talking about a stage about storytelling. Characters. This portion, we're going to hit twice. There's two characters in every story. Just like we had in our storytelling experience, there's the storyteller, and then there's the characters within the story. Sometimes they're yourself, sometimes they're others. Sometimes we craft these mystical characters and we create people within the stories, or we create, you know, characters. This character under the ground is going to be who you are as the storyteller. Being incredibly authentic, which is the first step underneath, and exposing the character of what you believe in, who you are, is very, very important to deliver in your storytelling. Many great storytellers will give a really refined process of who they are when they're delivering stories. They introduce themselves in a way that allows you to relate not only to the stories and the characters that they're developing within, but they're also giving you an example of who they are as a storyteller, and that's important as well too. So note that, and note your motivations, your core value system as a storyteller will also bring about the fruit that you like if you craft a good story. Now I'm going to get into the basics of what's above the ground in any structure of a narrative story. You have to have these obstacles within the story. Sorry, these characteristics. You need to have a key character. This has to be somebody that's sympathetic, that you can emotionally relate to. Do we have any of those examples in our storytelling where you were connected with the story, whether it be a story about somebody else or the selfie or whatever it was, but you were connected with this story through the character? You could relate to the story. We have to care about this person or this actor or this animal or whatever the thing that we're telling the story about. We have to be emotionally connected to that character in order to care where the story's going to go. And that character has to address a hurdle and overcome that hurdle to get a reward. When we're crafting stories, we always want to stick with this format of character, addressing a hurdle, and getting a reward. Okay? Really basic, and I'll show you why. That character, who you care about, is confronting and dealing with this hurdle to reach this reward. When you get to that point in a story, it's going to bring about two things. The fruit of the good story will answer two things. What's the story about, literally? What happens in the narrative? Who's the character? What goal is he or she trying to reach? And what obstacle is in the way? But a really good story will bring about another portion. And this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where you're going to be able to relate to your clients. What's the story really about when you're telling stories? This is where the depth comes in. In a way, we're saying, what's the point? What's the universal meaning that someone should draw from the story? What's the lesson? So I'm going to give you an example of this in a great story. Has anybody seen the Rocky movies?
Yeah?
Okay. So you got Rocky, right? Now Rocky's this guy from Philly, underdog, no name, nobody knows who he is, and he's got a chance to fight the champ. That would be the hurdle. Rocky, this underdog's a character who we care about. We can emotionally relate to him, the guy in the subs, you know, running up the stairs in his sweatsuit, just a nobody. And he gets a chance to fight the champ. Now the reward is he goes all the way. Goes the distance with Apollo. Crazy. You guys remember? It's a good story, right? So, he doesn't even have to beat the guy for the reward to be a reward. And it's an amazing story. We're attached to it, but the depth of the story, because not everybody's a boxer, and the reason why everybody can relate to the story is not because they are a bum from the suburbs. Get up, you bum! It's none of that. We're not boxers, all of us. I like to do it every now and then, but not very good. I get beat up like Rocky sometimes. I don't go the distance. I only do about 3 rounds instead of 12. And they hit each other really hard in that movie. You guys remember that action? It's really good. So the story's really about Rocky overcoming the obstacle of his pride, about becoming this accepted character for Polly and for, you know, It was Mac was his coach, or Mick or something.
Mick,
yeah. Yeah, that guy's awesome.
Yeah, we can try.
Yeah. So the story is really about Rocky overcoming this hurdle in his life, which we can all relate to, where we're looking for love, right? He wants to earn his positioning with his wife, right? He wants to make sure that Polly thinks he's a cool dude. And he has to do that. We can relate to that story. That's what the story is really about, is this guy overcoming his fears, overcoming these obstacles, and he doesn't even have to win the fight for us all to relate to him. And this is where storytelling in this arc will benefit you in every way that you go about telling stories out there. If you can get to the story that's really behind the story and communicate using a character, an obstacle, and a reward system, and tell a story behind the story that everybody can relate to, you're going to have customers in your hands. Your wife is going to be very happy with you, your husband. You can communicate in this fashion. You're going to be able to touch the deep desires within people's hearts and connect with them on an emotional level through storytelling. And that's why I wanted to share with you guys a little bit of the storytelling arc so we can get that. Because these three pictures, the character, the obstacle, and the reward, lie at the heart of it all. If you don't have them all, you might have something, but you don't have a story. So you want to keep that in mind. When you're communicating through your marketing, through posting online, you know, you tell a story with everything that you do. And your character is on the line with everything that you do. You're being, you know, sort of you all the time in what you do. I'm going to tell you a little bit of my story that we've gone through this now, and I'm going to talk to you guys very, you know, clear and authentic, so I hope you don't mind. My story, my character, has changed over the last few years. You know, like I said at the beginning, I do social justice work, social advocates against the sexual exploitation of children and youth, like pretty crazy stuff, right? We work in a framework where we're relating with a lot of people in a lot of different aspects of their life and some very challenging circumstances. You know, we've, in the last little while, I've done interviews with people who have been in the porn industry for a long time, seen the glamour and the glitz of that industry. Actually, the top grossing porn stars in the world are now not in it. And kind of exposing this sexualized culture that we live within. And in order for me to deliver content like this to people without doing like a crazy, you know, emotionally driven, human trafficking style, dark message, that emotional key doesn't hit sometimes. So I have to figure out unique ways to craft stories around this. My story is that I was affected by pornography in a major way when I was 13 years old. I was a 13-year-old boy. I was just searching online, looking for cars. I could get people to put hands up in the room, but I won't, right? I'll put them both up. That's me, right? I'm the guy, 13 years old, surfing the web, and I come across something that's super attractive to me at that time, because before I had only seen, like, you know, porn in magazines or things like that, but now I've got attracted by video, online pornography, and I was hopelessly addicted for about 10 years of my life, so I was about 23 years old. So over the past few years, I've been working through a process to say, like, why is it that, you know, I would be so gripped by this thing, and how can I, you know, work around it? Because I didn't even see a problem with it for 10 years, right? Like, no issues at all. I would promote this stuff. I'd be like, oh yeah, these are the best sites to check out. Yeah, check this one, whatever. No problem. Till I started to realize how this affected every relationship in my life. The relationship with my wife, my kids, right? In my workplace. How I viewed women. Right? I just started to see how my character was being shaped
by the activities that I would participate in, and a lot of it had to do with wasted time online, which is a thing we've talked about today, being not distracted. I spent a lot of wasted time online looking at crappy content. So I made a little change in 2012. I'll change my content consumption. I'll watch something different. You know, I will look at a business, book. I'll look at making some more money online rather than watching porn, right? And that little change started to seed some major things in my life in a very expedient fashion. I say this story so you guys can understand a little bit about me, right? We don't have the character, the hurdle, and the reward yet, but I'm going to tell you the character. I've just exposed the hurdle, and I want to talk to you guys a little bit about a reward. Your stories will be able to duplicate as well. So before I tell you a little bit about what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you how, in a very fast, expedited process, since 2012, how we started an organization to prevent sexual exploitation of children and youth through the mind of a 13-year-old boy. And it was me at one time, and now it's passed on to another.
So there you go. There's the conversation of Joel Conway. And we're out of time. So we'll be back in, we'll be back in next week for sure, right?
Yeah.
All right. So this has been the Community Living. We'll leave you with a song, whatever song it is on the Ghost Mix, and we'll be back again next week. Take care, everybody.
Howdy, folks. We're the Bitterweed Draw, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.